Be seated, please. Court is ready to hear argument in the second cause 090420 Esperanza Andrade in her official capacity as Secretary of State for the State of Texas versus NAACP of Austin, Nelson Linder, Sonia Santana, and David Van Oss.
Please the court, Mr. Monson will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. The Constitution requires good voting systems, not perfect ones, and its plain text places the task of balancing perfection and practicality on the legislature, not the courts. Under those two principles, plaintiff's lawsuit must be dismissed for standing and immunity grounds. Plaintiffs lack standing because, as the court recognized in Brown versus Todd, a voter needs to allege more than his status as a voter to establish standing. In this case, the plaintiff's affidavits assert only the same generalized policy concerns with which they have unsuccessfully lobbied the legislature for the past decade. Neither those generalized policy concerns nor the disconnected anecdotes contained in their appellate briefing can make this an appropriate, concrete, and particularized dispute. And immunity bars at least the bulk of plaintiff's claims, because these are ultra vires claims, and the facts alleged in plaintiff's live petition describe violations of neither the election code nor Article 6 of the Constitution.
Would someone who's on the ballot and lost a race and maybe will run again in the future, would that person have standing as Mr. Van Oss contends?
The person who's lost a race,
yes,
they do have standing. That's Wood and Berry. That's the traditional Texas common law mechanism for bringing these challenges. The losing candidate seeks a recount and brings a quo warranto proceeding challenging the method of the recount. That person has standing. And let's turn to standing. I want to make clear a distinction that I think is inherent in Justice Medina's question and I think explains the whole standing riddle in this case. This is not a case about the right to vote. This is a case about the relative policy merits of two alternative mechanisms for performing recounts after someone has voted. Plaintiffs don't allege in their affidavits that they're not going to be able to vote. They're saying they're going to be worried about hypothetical situations that would happen in a hypothetical recount while they're exercising their constitutionally protected right to vote.
Well, if your vote cannot be properly counted, isn't the right to vote sort of inherent and part of that argument? What good does a vote do you if ultimately you can't certify the vote properly?
Well, and let's be clear. They're not alleging that their votes aren't going to be counted. That's the distinction here. This is not a suit about voting or having your vote counted.
Well, it's the audit. The audit. If someone wanted to audit the votes that they did cast.
Well, yes, that's part of it. I mean, and going previewing the merits of the ultra-virus claim a little bit, neither the Texas Constitution nor the election code allows an audit of the votes. It only requires an audit of the election system and a recount of the votes, which is a separate statutory right conferred on the candidate. So, I mean, in some ways, yes. If you presuppose their argument the Constitution requires an audit of the vote, in addition to what the Constitution actually provides, which is a right to vote and have your vote counted, then they win standing and the substance of the case. But that right is nowhere in the election code or the Constitution. And, you know, that's really at the heart of the Court of Appeals' error. The Court of Appeals assumed that their expert's affidavit correctly described Texas law and then presumed standing because they said, hey, you violated Texas law. No assertion of fact in the appellate briefing or before the trial court substantiates a concrete and particularized injury.
What is the proof, or do you contend you don't have to have any, that the e-slate ensures the accuracy of a vote or the integrity of the vote?
Well, I don't think at this point we have to bring up proof. This isn't the case on the merits. The question here is whether the petition as drawn invokes the court's jurisdiction to resolve a lawsuit.
So it's at least possible that they're right about problems that they believe might be inherent in e-slate. And should the court be concerned about that or not? Or we're just not at that stage?
Well, we're not at that stage, but I think the nature of the concerns as they've articulated them are appropriate for the legislature or maybe the Travis County Commissioner's Court rather than for this court. Let's look at it in terms of concreteness and particularity. Concreteness is easy. Justice Waldrop explained the concreteness problem in his dissent very ably. All of their alleged harm depend on intervening hypothetical acts by third persons. That's pretty much the definition of a case over which there isn't concrete standing. Now, let's look at what makes this case particularized, and I'd like to look both at their assertions and at the remedies that they seek on page 15 of the record. There is nothing about their assertions that ties their worries about the vote election system to these plaintiffs. No particularized interest that they have in any election is going to be resolved by answering the questions that they've presented or giving them the injunction that they ask for, which, among other things, asks for creating an entirely new audit provision that would require a systematic recount on the electronic balloting machine compared to paper records, something that isn't contemplated in the statute of the Constitution.
Is there any type of voting apparatus decision that your client could make would have standing to challenge?
This is a hypothetical, but let's assume that the Secretary of State adopted a voting machine that you could show there was a statistical probability would result in a miscount. And so anybody's vote would be tainted by a significant statistical probability that it would not be counted. I think that's at least getting closer to standing, because that's showing an imminent harm that's directly tied to the right to vote and have your vote counted, rather than an abstract policy concern about the relative merits of two different ways of performing a recount after your vote's been submitted and tabulated.
There is a study, there is some criticism of this Travis County vote system, and as I understand it, there has been a request that we take judicial notice of this particular study. I don't recall seeing a response from you. What is your view of the judicial notice question?
We don't oppose the judicial noticeability, both because it's judicially noticeable, it's a public document, and because that document shows that this is a legislative determination, not a judicial one. That committee looked at all of these concerns, you know, and it's able to address the generalized, non-specific policy concerns that plaintiffs have by suggesting that Travis County, when it buys a new system, buys one with a paper printout. But I think there's two things that are important in that study. First of all, it took 45 people looking at all of these studies in kind of a vague political manner to balance their policy preferences and decide what would a good recommendation be for the decision maker. And second, page 73 in the summary and conclusion of their findings, the 45 members of the committee assert that the current Travis County system, with the security measures that Travis County has enacted in addition to the Eastlake system, is in fact secure. The heart of their standing argument and the heart of their substantive argument has always been that the Eastlake by itself creates an unreliable recount, in part because it isn't safe from tampering. But the Travis County Committee found that the current system as implemented, which is not, by the way, the system that's described in any of the standing affidavits, in Professor Wallach's expert testimony, or in the appellate briefing, they've never alleged that the Travis County system with the extra security measures violates the election code or the Constitution.
You said that there might be standing if there's evidence of a significant statistical probability of error in counting the votes in this Eastlake system. I think, is that accurate statement of what you said?
If you read the case law extremely aggressively, yes.
Okay. Well, how does the evidence from the respondent's expert about the DRE problems in 2004 in Collin County in 06 and Tarrant County 08 and Bexar County in 08 and several other counties, how does that impact your statement there?
Well, those are the kind of concerns about isolated incidents that you might take to the legislature. There is nothing in those isolated anecdotes that ties any particular justiciable harm to these plaintiffs. And so that makes their claim neither concrete nor particularized. Moreover, you know, let's take the Webb County incidents, because those are the only ones that are actually in the trial court record. Everything else was introduced at the Court of Appeals record and isn't in evidence before in the trial court record. It might have been mentioned in the trial court pleadings, but Wallach's affidavit describing the Webb County incident is the only thing that there's actually an affidavit about. In that affidavit, as described in their appellate briefing, the problem was negligence on the part of poll workers. Well, there's nothing about negligence on the part of poll workers that's isolated to the DRE or the Eastlake system. You know, a poll worker could spill coffee on an entire box of paper ballots, rendering them illegible, making them not part of the ballot. There's nothing isolated and special about the Eastlake system. It makes an allegation that sometimes polling workers mess up into a concrete or justiciable controversy appropriate for this court to resolve.
It sounds like on one level you're arguing that the respondent's position is that any voter in a county that used the DRE system would have standing, as respondents, you believe, are arguing, to bring this type of an action, and the case law just does not provide that broad a net for standing for these types of suits.
Exactly. Or if you turn it around, if you look at what they've provided, there's no test based on these data points that can give these plaintiffs standing that wouldn't result in providing generalized standing to every person who merely alleges that they're a voter.
In the 33 some odd states that no longer permit these, what was the process that resulted in their prohibition? Was it were some of those cases brought in court and a judicial determination made, or were they legislative, or what?
I don't have an exhaustive research on that done. I believe that most, I'm not aware of any case outside of the Stewart versus Blackwell case, which involved punch card voting, that struck down a balloting system on these grounds, but I can provide a letter with the court summarizing the research on that issue.
Mr. Munson, before you run out of time, could you hit that sovereign immunity issue?
Certainly. The starting point for the sovereign immunity analysis is Heinrich. The idea of Heinrich is you can sue an official for prospective injunctive relief regarding to stop that official from violating the law. But if the allegations in the petitions taken as true don't describe a violation of law, the lawsuit has to be dismissed because it's in substance one to control state action and is barred by sovereign immunity. Now, there's two parts of this, the statutory argument and the constitutional argument. And the statutory argument's pretty easy. They don't like that the secretary certified a balloting system that doesn't require a contemporaneous paper record of each ballot cast. But the Election Code expressly contemplates exactly that kind of system. The definition section for the title says a balloting system can be wholly electronic. The minimum certification requirements for electronic balloting systems say that the minimum requirement is that it maintain an electronic ballot image of each ballot cast. And most importantly, Section 213.016, which is the provision that governs recounts when you have an electronic balloting system, says to perform the recount, you print out the images of the ballots from the electronic ballot images after the election is complete. The plain text of the statute forecloses their claims under the statute.
That doesn't seem to be like much of a recount. I mean, that doesn't seem to be like much of a recount. It's going to give you the same it's going to give you the same printout that there are numbers inside the system.
Well, that goes to perhaps their constitutional claim, but their lawsuit says that the election code as written requires a contemporaneous paper record. The Secretary of State is just here to point out that the text, the legislature chose exactly that. And so the only question that would be left substantively is the legislature barred from choosing to have recounts that way? And under Wood, in Wood, the court held that the purity of the ballot box provision is non-justiciable.
But all I'm saying is that paper or no paper, if you're simply asking the machine to repeat itself, it's going to give you the same number it gave you the first time.
Sorry, let me clarify. Under 213.016, to which the Secretary of State as a matter of practice applies Chapter 214, Subchapter C, you do actually have a group of commissioned election observers actually recount the votes from the paper ballots printed off of the electronic record. So it's not that
what I'm saying is the electronic record is not going to print anything different it doesn't generate in the first place.
Well, that's true.
So there's no recount.
Well, there is a recount.
If I look at 10 ballots and I happen to look at one of them wrong and somebody else recounts them and says, well, you made a mistake, that's a recount. If you ask the machine to repeat itself, it's going to repeat itself.
I'm going to push back a little bit on that definition of recount, because that's not what the election code says. An election code recount is verifying the vote count, so it's counting again.
What about the constitutional piece?
The constitutional piece, the purity of the ballot box provision is non-justiciable. The court held that in Berry and Wood. And so it's hard, and they don't ask the court to strike down the election code. Rather, they seem to imply that the election code somehow can't be read according to its plain language because of Article 6. Same thing with Section 2C. That only requires that the legislature adopt laws to deter fraud and improper influence, which isn't really even tied to the recount issue. And at any rate, there's no governing legal principle as long as the election code...
Maybe I misunderstand how the machine works. But if I strike the total in an Excel spreadsheet and ask it to recalculate, I'll bet you it gives me the same total a million times in a row.
Not necessarily. There's a couple of pieces to this, and there's a couple different kinds of recounts that you can have under Chapter 214. It isn't just that you run what the machine did the first time again. I assume I'm out of time, but I'd like to take a couple seconds and completely answer your question. You can have it run again on the same software. Chapter 214 says you can get different software and it use a different counting mechanism. So say instead of using Excel, you're using Quattro Pro. They have different mathematical algorithms that you can use to count electronically. So that's two different methods of counting. And then if you choose to exercise the right to have a manual recount, then it is being recounted by people who are looking at the records that are in the computer. Now, the records may be the same as the electronic images of the ballots. That's true. But the counting method has changed. And that's what the election code requires, is a new counting method, not an individual audit of every specific ballot cast.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Monson.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument now from the respondents.
The court, Mr. Herman will present argument for the respondents.
May it please the court. The dilemma is the same as the issues before this court. If the Secretary of State is correct that there's no standing until injury is suffered or incurred, and the defects in the machine prevent the detection of a demonstrable injury, then we never get back here. Secondly, with respect to sovereign immunity, if what the Secretary of State says is correct, that the Secretary of State, because she has the statutory authority to approve electronic voting machines, and because of that act, it is not an ultra vires act, even if the machine doesn't comply with the statute, then there is no challenge to that conduct. In response, I think, to Justice Wainwright's question, what if the DRE machine wasn't secret, didn't preserve the secrecy of the ballot? Or what if it didn't provide for write-in votes? Would a voter, given the statutory permission to seek injunctive relief, would he be unable to have standing? Would the Secretary of State be bulletproof? Well, of course not. And the concession that it's a matter of degree, that is, whether the machine meets certain of the statutory requirements, is an admission essentially that there is standing. Because both the petition in this case and the expert's testimony points out at least two statutory requirements that apply to these machines that are not met by this DRE machine. And those two are that, and this was pointed out independently by the Court of Appeals, the machine, in order to be approved, it must operate safely, efficiently, and accurately. Secondly, it must be capable of providing records from which the operation of the voting system may be audited.
Can I ask you, are you saying that every voter in Travis County under your analysis would have standing?
Any voter who is forced to use this DRE machine that has been certified by the Secretary of State in excess of her statutory authority would have standing.
Okay, and what about
So that's all voters?
Yes, sir.
The last two elections.
And what about the particularized injury aspect of that?
Well, the particularized injury, it's, I think, as Justice Guzman pointed out, it's not just the right to vote, as the Secretary of State would have you believe. And as the Court of Appeals pointed out, the right to vote is pretty hollow. The right to vote is meaningless unless you're also assured that that vote that you cast is going to be counted appropriately. So just like the Court of Appeals points out numerous federal cases, but one in particular that with all respect, the Secretary of State is absolutely mischaracterized in her briefing, Stewart v. Blackwell. There, the Secretary of State in the brief indicates that it is only based upon this detailed statistical analysis and affidavits that the court reached the standing issue favorably for the voters. But let me just read to you. It says, plaintiff's standing does not depend on any injury suffered in the previous election, but rather on the probability that their votes will be miscounted in upcoming elections.
How do the pleadings support this imminent or sufficiently likely aspect of the argument?
Well, the pleadings in our case, they indicate two things, and I would take issue with the Secretary of State. They state that the machine is inherently unreliable because of its susceptibility to manipulation and the inability or unwillingness of the maker of the machine to provide the underlying software and programs and so forth to the Secretary of State. And incidentally, I would point out in answer to your question that on page 9 of the Secretary of State's brief, she acknowledges that remand is appropriate for at least the proposition that Hart make all of their information available to the Secretary of State. So what we're talking about is really a question of degree. Who says that in response to the Secretary of State's argument, who says what degree of statistical probability would give someone standing? That's why we're not here talking about the merits.
But you can't. There is no way, and I haven't seen it in the briefing, any attempt to show any kind of concrete particular injury by the plaintiffs in this case. It's a broad all voters kind of injury.
Well,
and hypothetical at that.
Well, it's not hypothetical in this sense. The Secretary of State exceeded her statutory authority in approving this machine. And we get back to the circular nature of the Secretary of State's argument. First of all, the machine, just as Justice Heck pointed out, if you're going to audit somebody who keeps their books by QuickBooks, you don't go in and say, reprint last year's P&L, because it's going to be exactly the same as the one you're auditing.
How does a contemporaneous record, though, make that process any different? It would seem the machine would give you the same record in either case. So how does getting a contemporaneous record of the vote change?
The problem is the fundamental issue, really, since whatever it is, 1787, I guess, is that every voter is entitled to cast his vote. And in determining, having spent 2 weeks in Florida for our past governor looking at paper ballots, the issue is ascertaining voter intent.
And it's a pretty inexact science.
Well, there.
When the human factors come in, it's quite different. But you haven't really answered the question. I mean, there you are not attempting to make a particularized injury case here. And my question is, can you cite any other case out of this jurisprudence where standing was allowed in the absence of a particularized concrete injury?
Oh, well, there are numerous cases, Your Honor, and they're in our brief, but Bloom is a case, BLUMV, Lanier, I think it was, and
in those cases, correct me if I'm wrong, the challengers weren't just voters, they signed the petition for the proposition that was on the ballot.
That's exactly right.
They said if they were just voters, it wasn't enough.
That's exactly right, in that case particularly, Justice Wainwright. But Stewart v. Blackwell is a federal case. I can't remember. I think it's out of the Seventh Circuit, I guess. Weber and Wexler, all cases cited by the Court of Appeals, where the same issues essentially were addressed. All of those voters had standing. Not only that, the statute itself, the Election Code 273.081, confers standing on anyone who is even in danger of being harmed by the conduct of the or failure to observe the provisions of the Election Code.
An imminent harm kind of analysis.
No, well, it says in danger of being harmed. I don't think in that sense, given that the Secretary of State has exceeded her statutory authority, that there's a requirement that you would have to show the kind of imminent harm that you would in an injunction case.
So how much would you have to show? What is the danger of being harmed? What standard?
Well, if a voter could demonstrate, as these voters have, that they're forced to use a machine which does not comply with the Election Code, then they would be in danger of being harmed.
Okay, so what is that standard? I mean, what is danger of being harmed? I mean, some machine, but the machine, let's assume the machine works right. Is there any proof that the machine doesn't work right?
Absolutely.
Do they have to prove the machine doesn't work right, or it will not work right in their instance, probably? There has to be some standard.
Absolutely, and the question really on the merits is whether or not this machine complies with the standards that are articulated in the Election Code. The plaintiffs have pled that it does not, and that the Secretary of State has exceeded her statutory authority and has committed an ultra-virus act.
But in just about, I would say, in every single election of any in a community of any size, there are going to be errors. There are going to be lines that are too long. There are going to be ballots that are confusing. There are going to be typos. The butterfly ballot, which one am I voting for, you know, straight ticket, et cetera. And if they're standing in each one of those cases, anytime you can find an error in the ballot or the process, elections are going to come to a halt. So why isn't it better to funnel those sorts of complaints into the legislative process and let the political, you know, fights work out the outcome?
Well, I would answer it this way, Justice Jefferson. The legislature has passed the Election Code. They've stated what a machine has to have, the characteristics it has to have, and they've vested in the Secretary of State the discretionary authority to approve only those machines that meet that criteria. Okay, so.
But they've also twice considered and refused to pass legislation that would have required DRE machines to produce a contemporaneous, you know, paper record. They considered that. They, for one reason or another, good or bad, declined to enact it. And how should that factor into our decision making?
Well, it shouldn't at all, because you're dealing with the statute as it comes to you. You're dealing with the Secretary of State's conduct as it comes to you. The fact that, I mean, wisdom of the legislature, some people would
careful
characterize. I'll stay away from that. But what I would say, seriously, in response to your question, Justice Willett, is that should have no impact on the decision of this court.
Well, what about the Election Code provision that's on the books that does permit the use of ballot images from DREs to conduct a recount?
Oh, I don't dispute that there, and if you look at the statute, the way it's constructed and the way the legislature had put it together, there is a provision for electronic recounts. There is a totally separate provision for manual recounts. And the argument that the manual recount which requires, among other things, that the original ballot be present, is rendered meaningless if you accept the Secretary of State's position that it's, if it is garbage in, it's garbage out. You recount the garbage, and that's what you have. It's totally illusory. And please, with all due respect, keep in mind that our allegation, audit is a term of art. Audit means, it is defined in the dictionary as an official examination and verification of accounts and records.
Counsel, Section 122.011A of the Elections Code provides the criteria that a voting system must comply with to be used. A voting system may not be used in an election unless the system, and there's 11 requirements here. Which of those requirements is not satisfied by Eastlake?
There are at least two.
Okay, which are they?
That's subdivision 3, which requires that the machine operate safely, efficiently, and accurately. And 11 is capable of providing records from which the operation of the voting system may be audited.
Now, the Secretary of State makes a point of saying that that requires an audit of the voting system, not of the actual votes, and say that you go awry, at least in that regard, in your argument.
What the provision says is that it's capable of providing records from which the operation of the voting system may be audited. So if you're, it would be nonsensical to take the position that if the machine produced a record saying that it was in working order on November the 2nd, that would satisfy that. In any recount or audit, you're required, if you're going to audit, you have to verify. And to verify, you have to make sure that the original entry that is being counted was valid and was authentic. That's out of Webster's. You can't do it with this machine.
I'm confused. You don't challenge the constitutionality of the Elections Code, correct?
No.
You're saying the Secretary of State didn't comply with it. Section 11, subsection 11 of the section we're talking about, requires that the system be capable of providing records from which the operation of the voting system may be audited. You think records means paper records?
Well, I think that's what it means, but that's an issue for the trial court.
Well, then I'm also looking at 213.016. It says, with regard to a recount, the recount committee can determine how many members must be present, quote, during the printing of the images, close quote, from the system. That doesn't sound like a separate contemporaneous paper trail of the vote. It says the printing of images from the system. Why does that necessarily require, again, a paper trail?
Well, we say that it does, Justice Wainwright, but that would be a matter for the trial court based upon testimony about, I think anyone would agree that, as in any contract, that some of these provisions may be ambiguous. But the point is, what's before the court is standing and sovereign immunity.
Yeah, but the Secretary of State argues that you're really not alleging a cognizable claim because you're alleging a violation of the statute that the Secretary has clearly met,
right,
according to its reading.
What the Secretary of State is saying, like this court held in Heinrich, is that even if, if you look at their pleadings and if you look at the evidence that was before the trial court, to which there was no controverting evidence, I might add. But if you look at that taking all of that, that they still don't have a claim, okay? Well, and again, just for the purposes of illustration, let's just say that the machine didn't preserve the secrecy of the ballot. Or, as the Secretary has noted, there were substantial statistical problems in the counting of the vote with this machine. Then he says, okay, we'd have standing. Those qualities, those characteristics are also required. So if we came in and we alleged not number 3 or number 11, but if we alleged number 2, then we'd have standing? That's what he's saying.
Well, I think he's arguing something different. On your write-in example, if you were to interpret that write-in as requiring that someone have a number 2 leaded pencil to write in, and that's not allowed, and the Secretary of State says, but we do allow write-in, it's just electronic, that's what he's talking about, the interpretation of these statutory provisions, which we can look at and read as a matter of law, can't we?
I don't know. I don't know if you can for this only. For example, on most of them, yeah, either it keeps it secret or it doesn't. The write-in, of course, that's an example. That's not an issue here. But if there were a provision to allow a legitimate write-in vote where the intent of the voter was ascertainable and capable of being validated and authenticated, all right, in your example, it would be more than likely, then we wouldn't have a claim. But here, we have pleadings and we have expert testimony that the machine is not accurate. And we have expert testimony that the records that this machine produces do not make a meaningful audit or make an audit which satisfies the fundamental requirements of a person's right to vote. And that encapsulates the position of the plaintiffs and the respondents before this court. So maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but we've pled it. We have the right to plead it, and all we want is to go back to the trial court and sort it out. But the fact, I mean, to take the Secretary's position, she could approve a machine that met none of these qualities, and no one would have, the case would never get up here, right? Because nobody'd have standing.
Thank you, Mr. Herman. Are there any additional questions? Thank you. The court will hear a rebuttal.
Counsel, I was confused about your answer to Justice Wainwright's and Justice Willett's questions earlier about when voters would have standing,
mm-hmm.
And that we were just talking
and
about.
And that goes to the core of my response. You would have standing if the allegation is that the system doesn't count your vote or you're prevented from voting. So, for example, the Constitution in a self-executing provision requires that ballots be secret.
But that doesn't...
So if
it seems to me, how does that meet the particularity requirement? You just say it doesn't
well,
have to be met?
Well, okay. I think it might not. I'm not going to concede. I'm not conceding that the Stewart versus Blackwell statistical particularity theory works. I'm just saying that even under that theory, they don't win. Now, Stewart versus Blackwell, just to get this out of the way, was a Sixth Circuit case in which the judgment's been vacated that the dissent castigated for relying on the non-precedential passages of Bush versus Gore. So that's why I'm not going to embrace it and say that that's the test for standing.
Well, in fairness, I did read your brief to say no voters would ever have standing.
That's
but
not
I
the case.
Don't take that to be your position here.
Not at all. No, our position is that if you can, let's another example that I think illustrates when you do have standing, a reapportionment case under the federal constitution. In that case, because your legal theory itself manifests the fact that your vote is going to be diluted, it is impossible for any voter to cast a vote that is given constitutional protection because they are all diluted. That means that there's a particularized injury to every voter. Because there's going to be a problem anytime anybody casts a vote in the upcoming election. That's different from this case, where they're just stringing together anecdotes of times that things have gone wrong and said, well, maybe something's going to happen.
So it boils down to concrete injury.
Absolutely.
But I mean, the particularity goes out of it, out of the equation if there is a significant concrete injury.
I think they're two sides of the same coin. It's hard to extract. I think that they're useful as analytical tools for looking at the problem, but I don't really see them as separate prongs that, you know, stand independently of each other.
Mr. Herman said a couple of times that the intent of the voter must be ascertainable. What does that mean to you?
Well, I'm not sure, in part because That's not what, the election code doesn't say anything about determining the intent of the voter in this context. The election code requires an audit of the voting process.
I think he's talking about in a recount.
Well, and it requires a recount, which is a confirmation of the vote count. So it's that's a recounting of the vote. And it requires an audit of the election system, which, to answer some of the concerns that Justice Wainwright was raising, is provided for in the current system by a paper record of major election events against which the electronic ballots can be compared to see if there's been a problem in the operation of the system. But in neither case is there a right, just because Webster's defines the word audit differently than the legislature has defined it in the election code, to an independent verification of every vote cast. I mean, to take it a step further, on the plain language of their petition, they ask for the right to verify each voter, to verify whether his own vote was counted. But as the court recognized in the 1890s, if you could go back and identify your own ballot once it's been cast, the constitutional requirement of an anonymous ballot would be forfeited. I mean, their legal theory, their entire standing argument depends on the presupposition that their legal theories are correct. That's the problem with the Court of Appeals' approach to the standing issue.
Well, but if the machines won't count the votes right, that's a concrete injury.
If the machines can't count the votes right, yes.
And so do you agree they've alleged that?
Just no.
On the pleadings?
They have not alleged that. They have only alleged that a hypothetical recount would be subject to doubt.
But if they had alleged that, I guess your position would then be, still they have to come up with something to show that the allegations have some substance to them.
Yes.
To get as far as standing.
It shouldn't be enough for them to say, I'm interested in knowing what the statute means because I'm worried about it, and my concern about what the statute means gives me standing to come to court. If all you have is a abstract policy concern about what a statute means, you should go and ask the legislature to look at it in a committee, not bring it to court.
How does Section 273.081 affect your standing analysis, or have you incorporated it already into your position?
Well,
explain the Justice Act.
putting aside all the questions about whether it creates a cause of action, I mean, I think that there's a...
Just about standing.
About standing, it only requires a cause of action on its face if there's a violation or a threatened violation. If what's being alleged isn't a violation of something that's in the election code, you don't trigger it, and you don't have to look at the threatened harm element to see if there's statutory standing.
What if what they allege does just constitute harm or danger of being harmed without an infraction of the election code?
I guess I just don't. I'm having the text ties the harm to harm caused by the violation of the election code. I mean, that's the only way to read it. So I'm having a hard time thinking of when you could invoke 237.081 if your harm wasn't tied to a violation of the code.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel. The clause is submitted. The court will take another brief recess.